Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. My name's Eric, with respect, co-host Robert.
Hi.
Yep, and hope we can take you away from a crazy week of work and life for just a few, maybe a short hour here. Delve into all things that have been competitively minded over the last 7 days in the world of Warhammer 40,000. We start off with some new models. One is a resculpt. The other one is a new model from the ground up. So let's start. Which one do you want to start with here, Robert? You play both factions.
Well, I'll give it to the Greenskins. They got real big DACA. And it looks really freaking... He has the option for a drill for an arm, bro.
And we're talking about the new mech boy, and he does look huge. I mean, I'm trying to...
Yeah,
how big is the model?
He is officially a big mech. So the big mechs in the ye olden days were just boys with funny-looking faces and a backpack. Nah, this guy is legitimately the size of a new war boss. I'm pretty sure that's going to be either a 40 or a 50-millimeter base.
Yeah, I think it was huge. I was just like, whoa. I was trying to think if there's any new gear on that, because it looked like it just was a shock attack gun that was originally, that was the big thing with the kind of like a flowering open up type gun. Is that what I'm thinking it is?
If I can translate my orc weaponry to common. So he has his normal power claw, which was the weapon he always had. The drill is new, and the guns... one of them is like a, I believe it's a shock attack gun or something similar to it, and one of them is like a custom mega blaster.
That makes more sense.
Yeah, because the weapon profiles, at least in picture, match the old they even previewed the one that I'm not familiar with, and that's a tractor blaster. So it's actually a brand new gun. It's just the tractor cannon that the Grot tanks had.
On a guy. Okay, that's kind of scary.
Yeah. It's still only one shot, because, you know, it is a tractor cannon, it is gravity. Strength 10 of AP2, D6 plus 1. Okay, that's all well and cool, but what's it really good for? It's really good for taking down planes. Because it has anti-fly 3 plus and devastating wounds.
I don't like it. No. I do not like it.
It's kind of awesome. It's still not as funny as a shock attack gun rolling 2d6 for your strength. But it's pretty cool.
Oh my. Okay. Now the second one, though, that... is a brand new model, correct? A new unit altogether?
No, it is not.
Oh, it's not. Okay.
No, the one I was most excited about, because of the fact that he was real wide, he was real stocky, he has the most beautiful tactical rock. It is the resculpt of the Custode Shield Captain. No longer are the days that your shield captains are in the same pose ever. He's a standalone model now.
Hmm. Okay.
The important thing about him is he has a Melta spear.
Yeah. So I wonder what units can he still join? Did they change that at all? We just don't know yet.
No. It's because it's just a shield captain. The shield captains can join wardens and custodian guard and Sagittarium custodians. And pyrethite custodians with pyrethite spears. That's basically it. Because they're normal troops. He's not a Terminator captain, which, if we have individual shield captain models, maybe we'll get individual shield captains on bike and Terminator armor, maybe? I don't know. I'm hopeful.
All right.
My only issue with the model... they made his face more detailed, and he looks like a very, very grumpy old bald man.
Well, they are, 10,000 years old and didn't get to get out much?
Well, I mean, there's 10,000 of them. I don't know how old they actually are anymore, but yes, it's fine. I was just hoping that some funny model sculptor somewhere was going to go, it's a custodian. Let's make him look like Henry Cavill.
Oh, I see where you're going at. Okay.
That would have been funny. He would have been the only shield captain that I would have willingly had with no helmet on.
Well, not quite. So,
yeah. Oh, well. But otherwise, the only other reveals that were there were for Blood Bowl and Age of Sigmar, which they were very underwhelming unless you like funny goose noises.
But yeah. It was one of those hard... Because Blood Bowl was the game that got me into Games Workshop to begin with. That was my first Games Workshop game. And we're talking about first edition Blood Bowl. And that's one thing that drives me nuts about that game is... every now and then they come out with stuff, you kind of go, why in God's name would you ever play that? And it's just like, why? I get the humor of the game and the fun of the game, but at the end of the day, you're still shelling out the same amount of money and hobby time to put that onto the field, and then your opponent's going to be like, I got to play against what? It's just one of those releases I just scratch my head and go, that could have been something a lot cooler, but somewhere there's somebody who loves that team, but I'm just like, come on.
Well, I was chatting with one of my players from the tournament on Saturday that I was running, who's really competitive in Blood Bowl. Apparently, those guys are supposed to be like halflings or something.
Or gnomes or something like that, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Because there is a halfling team and they're all cooks, which I don't understand. But anyway, keep going.
But yes, that is all that's really come out over the last couple weeks. I know 40K has been really quiet because there's been a lot of Sigmar releases coming up. So it just makes me more impatient for when they're going to release both of those books.
So yeah, a couple things. So, okay. So we've seen all three silhouetted models. We saw the Kroot that was riding the large lizard. We've seen the Custodes. And yes, I realize it's not a Votan.
As much as other people thought it was.
Yeah, I'm still look at that helmet. I'm like, what the heck? But anyway, and the orc guy. So now I'm like going, yeah. So now I'm kind of thinking, is the pipeline completely clear of previews and silhouettes and hints other than the extreme close-up? I forgot what that thing's called. Every Tuesday, they always take an extreme close-up of a model that hasn't been released. So.
Oh, the Rumor Engine?
Rumor Engine. Thank you. Couldn't think of it. And most of those have felt like Sigmar models. So I'm like, okay. So I think we're kind of stuck with, okay, codices that are expected to come out based on the timeline and the mystery of what the redacted codex would be in the summer.
Yeah. I am kind of hoping that the Custodian book gets released before Scorched Earth. So that way I can use it.
So in the next 4 weeks, that'd be pretty nice.
Yeah, it would be pretty nice, but I know it's probably not going to happen.
I'm trying to think who would be ahead of it. You think the orcs would get released ahead of time?
Unless they do like a duo release.
Which I think they've done. I don't know.
They've done duo releases before for like Admech and Necrons, I think. Mm-hmm. But I mean, they probably also are going to spread them out.
I mean, they usually do originally used to say for marketing reasons, but now I'm beginning to think their logistics can't handle it. It's the continued shortfall of material available at your local hobby store.
Yep. That's why I'm pretty sure I'm going to have to play the index rules, and I'm perfectly fine with that because I do have 15 wardens. It's going to be fun.
Should be fun. All right. So those are some games in the future. Let's talk about some games from this past weekend. So we've got a few tournaments to talk about. So one of which isn't quite done yet. So those crazy British guys playing their tournaments on until Monday.
Yeah, that is true. But I'm pretty sure the event is wrapped up. And that's the South Coast Super Major. Sometimes I would want to fly over there and just attend it to say that I was there. I would go like 0-5 just to be like, yep, I flew over to Britain. So it was a solid 140 players, and the current placings without the event officially being ended is the top five. Tom Simpson is the only guy that had 4 wins and a draw, and he bounced out of the bubble because of it, I'm pretty sure. But he got some pretty nice scores along the way. In fourth place is James Hobbs. Wow, I'm missing letters today. With Tau. Then we have Nicholas Willingale with Eldar. Second place is Ed Watts with Grey Knights. And in first place is David Gaylord with Imperial Guard.
So if you happen to listen to their podcast, Fireside Chat, they have been talking about the hidden power of Astra Militarum and what they were kind of expecting. So the fact that he actually won the event is pretty hilarious as they kind of lead up to this. So curious to see what the reaction is post-match. So what's in the list?
That's always the fun bit about reviewing the faction is just, sure, Guard sounds terrible in this index. It doesn't add the same punch it used to have. But yeah, his list is something like Stupid Guy on a Horse. So, Lord Solar Leontis. 2 Tank Commanders, Ursula Creed. 1 unit of Catchhand Jungle Fighters. 1 unit of Infantry Squad. His list is kind of displayed out funny. I don't know if it's that he... No, never mind. I am reading it right. 10 bodies, 8 bodies. Okay. And then we have a 6-man Bulgrin squad, 3 units of Kasterkin, 2 Basilisks, 2 Manticores, 2 Scout Sentinels, and a Chimera. I see 4 things with indirect fire.
I was just saying, it's like, how much indirect fire do we have in that list?
Just a couple big guns and 1 that fires for effect. And no mortars. You would generally associate, going mass indirect fire by playing mortars and stuff. Well, obviously the mortars don't do enough, and David took enough bodies to run around and do things. I don't know where Ursula Creed gets attached to. I'm pretty sure Leontis can't be attached. And then obviously the tank commanders are vehicles. So... yeah, I'm not adverse in Guard enough to know exactly what the power of this list is, but I know it had a really good pilot.
Yeah, I'm definitely not versed in Guard myself, but the general impression from listening to the previous talk about this list is, it basically is a push your way onto objectives and try and get me off, type thing. But it also has enough indirect fire to be harassing, but it's not one indirect fire. It's one of those, you can't stay put, but you got to go into the teeth, and it's of the list, and that becomes the hard part.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure that maximum unit of Bulgrin still does a bunch of damage, and I'm pretty sure that's what the Chimera is for, is carrying the Bulgrin along with whatever else. That's at least one idea anyway. But yes, hopefully we're right and points don't just randomly get changed, because that'd be funny.
But there we go. But definitely, if you have a chance, check out the podcast, Fireside Chat. It's kind of funny, between their British accent and their soft jazz intro. I always feel underdressed when I listen to that show.
I mean, it's kind of true. When I got to talk to Nassim Fushan. Yeah. Wow, I'm totally blanking on the other host. Wow, I feel real bad.
Vic Vijay,
yeah. I don't know why I was thinking of Nassim Fushan. Because they talk. No, I was like, I don't know why Nassim was stuck in my head, but I know it was someone that they talked about. Anyway, when I talked to Vic, I am underdressed because he was a very, very nice person to talk to. And I could talk for hours, but I had to go somewhere.
Yeah, I remember I had a family commitment. I forgot exactly what it was. I know it had something to do with my mom. I'm trying to remember if it was health related or something else. And I had to bow out at the last second. And I was like, oh, and I listened to the show and I was just like, I missed that. No. So we got to get him back on the show. That was a lot of fun. So. Yep.
Sorry, Vic. Didn't mean to space your name there for a minute.
But anyway, so that was our event there. What else do we have going on this weekend?
Well, we are staying outside of the U.S. for this one. We're going to go to, yeah, we'll talk about Goonhammer's event. So the Goonhammer opened a nice 49 players, and it ended up looking something like with something like Greg Chamberlain with Eldar in fifth place, Jack Tite with Sisters in fourth, Matthew McCurdy with Space Wolves in third place, Kyle Grundy with Tau in second place, and in first place with almost a perfect score, Josh Roberts with Necrons.
It's kind of interesting with Josh Roberts still playing, and he's doing really well with Necrons, yet he's the guy the Games Workshop hired to balance the right, to basically make the balanced data slates. He's the, forgot the exact title that they came up with, but basically the competitive play match play and analyst or something like that. So I'll be curious to see if Necrons will get nerfed or not, or is it to continue to thrive until he decides to switch armies? I don't know.
Well, looking at his list, it is still Canoptic Court, still a really strong choice, but he has opted to forego any other kinds of characters besides Kryptex. So he has Zeras, so the biggest Kryptek, three Plasmancers, and three Technomancers. So redundancy, and then a total of 20 Immortals, and then we got two units of Canoptic Acanthrites.
Oh, yeah, that's the Forge
one. Yeah, the Melton Mosquitoes are coming back in force. And then two Doomstalkers, two minimum units of Swarms, and then 18 Wraiths.
Oh, I hate that. You, this giant wall of... Anyway.
Yeah, you made the adage with the guard list of, hey, you gotta move, you gotta eventually come into the teeth and fight us. This one, it doesn't even have indirect fire, and it's literally, you're gonna have to punch us real, real hard.
Yeah, I found, and both of us ran into that in our last two games. Ray ran into it as well. And it's funny because I looked at the profile of a Wraith and I went like, it's not that bad. What am I missing here? What am I missing here is the annoying Technomancer healing one or two of them per turn. I was like, oh, what the hell? That was brutal. I was like, oh, I knocked him down. He's got two Wraiths left in that unit. And now he's got four. What happened?
Yeah, the one time that I played into, I've played into it twice so far, and I have a 50% win rate with it with Custodes, and yeah, it's very, very annoying because it's really durable, and given you don't position carefully against them, they'll literally hold you out in the open for if they have any shooting to pick off whatever unit the Wraiths didn't eat for breakfast.
Yeah, I didn't have that experience. I think they had the issue of the Satan were the ones basically coming around and going after my transports, which is the right thing to do. But it was the basic thing was I kind of like, okay, you're holding that objective. I'm holding this objective. Why is he just staring at me? And I'm realizing because he's winning by standing there, coming after these other objectives he already had for that mission. He already had what he needed. So it's just like, duh. So you had to go in. And that's when I think I just waited too long to make the move, you know, make it my go turn. Because then, like I said, oh, look, I popped a whole bunch of them. They're not that tough. Well, they popped right back up. Oh no, this is bad.
Yeah, that's why I remember my second game. My opponent was very aware of keep the Kryptex out of view while you're in the fight phase, because of the fact that then people can't use the epic challenge strat on you because they can't physically see the character.
Okay.
Because if you use epic challenge on a unit that has a character, and if you charge into the wraiths, you have a very high percentage of killing the unit after that, because your character blows up the crypt deck, unless your opponent has a whole bunch of lucky invulns.
Right.
And then the rest of the attacks get allocated to the wraiths, and then your unit fights and smacks the wraiths, killing a good chunk of them, and now they don't get rerolls, well, as many rerolls, I think, and also they don't get to stand back up as quickly.
Right. I'm just trying to see how he stays out of line of sight, because as long as I get base to base, it should be okay. So,
well, it's careful positioning. So in the case of player placed terrain, with the way people are doing it now, since we have to stay outside of 4 inches of the center objective isn't important anymore. Well, as important. So now people put their first building on an objective in the corner that they want. So in theory, your unit of wraiths goes right up to the wall. They don't go through the wall. Your opponent comes forward, and let's say they don't charge you because right. it's a long charge or something. Well, your wraiths are on the point doing their job and just being like, well, we're not going to fight you, whatever. And then you present all six of them out on the other side of the wall to shoot their little pistols or whatever.
Got it. Okay.
And the cryptech stays behind the wall within 2 inches of two of them. So your opponent has to charge around the wraiths to be able to see the character.
Got it. That makes a little more sense to me, because at first I was like, wait a minute. You can't see me. We're in close combat, dude. But yeah, if they're behind the wall, yeah, I guess then you get the wall of all, and because they're like, wraiths are like on like 50 or 60 milliliter bases too, so you can easily force it. Yeah.
Yeah. The first instance that I had running into this, it wasn't the epic challenge strat, but it was the character needing to be seen to be a target. I had Trajan in combat with an Imperial Knight behind a wall, and the Imperial Knight couldn't see me.
Hilarity. Okay.
So yeah, he couldn't shoot into his own combat to take down Trajan. But yes. So congratulations, Mr. Roberts, on winning with the Legion of Grumpy Angry Robots. Mm-hmm. And speaking of Nassim continuing with the joke, he came in sixth place with Guard.
Nice.
Going 4-2. But with that, we can hop on over to our own continent, but we're still not in the country yet. We're going to go to the Toronto Winter Open, even though it's basically almost springtime. Weather is weird. So it was a sold out 90-person event, and the placings end up looking something like Nicholas Redford with Chaos Space Marines in fifth place. In fourth place is Ryan Pierce with Necrons. Third place is Quoc Le. That name's probably French. I probably butchered it. But he was playing Demons. In second place is Tim Dietleffs with Eldar. And in first place, Christopher Rice with Sisters.
Interesting. There are like three names. I was like, they're not on the list. But on like a list, I think one of them, Dustin Henshaw, I don't think is playing singles anymore. I think he only does team events moving this season. Didn't hear Scar's name on the list, so I was a little surprised by that. And I didn't hear Diogo, because with those other two guys out of play, I figured he would jump up to the top. But I'm like, what? And then you get a Demons player in the top five? So I'm like, what is going on here?
Well, Skari was there in attendance. He ended up coming in 10th, going 4-1-1.
Wow. Go 4-1-1 and still come in 10th place. That's competitive field. Okay.
Oh, yeah. So the list that Christopher was running looks like it's kind of the idea that I've been hearing about. It's Junith, Morven Vol, a Palatine, and Saint Celestine, so a whole bunch of big power characters. No Triumph, though, which I think is the one that I've heard about the most.
You know, and it's funny because I got all excited when we talked about the balanced data slate. I was like, ah, ha, ha, I can only put out two miracle dice instead of unlimited number of miracle dice. I guess I didn't read it that carefully. It's no more than two per unit.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have three units stacked around, it is still dishing out six miracle dice to local friends, and you still have Palantine there, turning them all into sixes. So I'm just like, oh, it's still there. It's still a thing.
Yeah, it's just capped at, hey, you can't do maximum damage with the first unit. You have to do it with the rest of them.
Yeah. Basically, what I'm hearing is that now it exposes it a little more because it's got to be in position to help benefit multiple folks, whereas before it could just sit back and uber buff one unit. So,
yep. And the rest of the list is a brick of Sacrosaints, so the Spear and Shield girls, three pairs of Crusaders. The fact that they're 25 points is just super silly. They're on 25 millimeter bases, too. They're tiny.
Yeah.
But and I then mean, we have.
Other than their invul save, I mean, do they do anything?
No, but that's 75 points that you can shove into strategic reserves and not care.
Okay.
So then after that is a 10 man Dominion squad, three Exorcists, one full unit of Paragon War suits, three units of 10 Repentia, a maximum unit of Zephyrim, and the Calidus Assassin. So, yeah, this is reading this. It kind of looks like it follows the same mantra as the guard list, where it will go out into objectives and it forces you to move with the exorcists because of the indirect fire. If exorcists still have indirect fire, I'm pretty sure they do. But it shoves you forward into range of the Paragon War suits and then the 30 Repentia that are going to run forward and eviscerate you with their giant chain swords.
Yeah, I haven't seen much of those of late, so I'm beginning to wonder, did they just get replaced by the Archivagellants, or are they, you know, what am I missing? Or,
well, I know the novitiates were interesting for a while because they were a battle line unit, so they had two OC. But I think the problem was they didn't have the damage output that the Repentia do, because I'm not outside of maybe rerolls from something. I don't know the Repentia squad off the top of my head. I knew they were swinging at strength 8 last edition, so.
Yeah. They were pretty sick. They pretty much took down everything. So.
Given you were, like, hitting on 4s with full rerolls and stuff, so.
Yeah, let me look it up while we're talking here.
But it is neat that Sisters squeaked out something, because between this and Cherokee Open being won by Thousand Sons of all things, plenty of variety.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of variety out there. I was about to say the whole don't sleep on Thousand Sons, man. They are, you need a strong pilot to work them, but yeah. So, Repentance Squads are two attacks, hitting on 4, strength 6, AP minus 2, 2 damage. They got a 5-up feel no pain, they benefit from Acts of Faith, and while the unit contains a Repentance Superior, each time a model on that unit makes a melee attack, you can reroll the hit if that unit makes a charge this turn, and you're also able to reroll the wound.
Ah! That's where it is. Because I know beforehand, they only ever brought the Repentia in, like, squads of 8.
So they're always rerolling hits and rerolling the wounds on charges.
Mm-hmm.
That's, yeah, strength 6. But with rerolls, you're still doing some damage. Because I think you're going to hit, like, 54% if you're normally wounding on 5s. So that means you're still a pretty good chance of wounding stuff that's strength or toughness 12.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that break point for a lot of heavy vehicles and stuff like that.
Yeah, and that's not even to mention the possibility of other buffs from someone like Celestine or Judith floating around nearby.
Yeah.
But yeah, congratulations to Christopher, winning with Sisters, literally pulling it out of a hat. And it does make me happy that every single event that we've talked about over the last couple of weeks has had a pretty good variety of top cut people. Just different armies, different strategies. Maybe the game's not as broken as everyone thinks it is.
You know, I was listening to a few other podcasts and getting some research done. You're absolutely right. There's definitely a big, it's probably the most balance it's ever been in terms of like win rate. And there is some concern that there's still the haves and the have nots, that there are certain armies, I mean, the Necrons in particular, that are still winning a lot more events than their fair share. And I guess Chaos Space Marines have fallen off a cliff since the data slate, which I don't know. I've not seen that locally, but maybe that's just, I don't know. I'll have to take a little harder dive. We haven't talked about them yet on this show, so this episode. So I'm kind of like, okay. But overall, I don't feel like there's, let's put it this way, there's no army I go, oh, I feel bad for this guy. You know, I think every army that I face is a threat. And likewise, I think everyone is the same. You know, there's some are a little more threatening than others. There's some new Eldari lists that are coming out. I thought we would talk about them today, but didn't realize they didn't look like they made the top five in a couple of them. But they're starting to feel more and more like what Eldari was supposed to feel like. So that's the other thing, is not only is it balanced, but the armies are starting to feel like they play like they do in the fluff. So it's kind of like, oh, neat.
But we do have one more event, so maybe we'll find that Eldar list floating around the top cut somewhere. And we are going down to Texas for the Clutch City GT, a very familiar name run by a very familiar name of Colin McDade.
Yep, friend of the show. And this one of this event, I was doing some research right before the show. Two things they do really, really well. One, I was double checking, hey, what kind of terrain setup they're going to do, because they're one of the early innovators of modern terrain, you know, the post 8th edition terrain set. And they actually did go back to using GW layouts. So they actually redid all their terrain, so it's no longer player placed. But the one thing that's really cool is whenever you see a picture, you know you're looking at Clutch City, because they took the typical ruins but gave them like a Western flair. So they look kind of like a tombstone, you know, gunfight at the OK Saloon type, OK Corral type feel. And I think that's really cool. I think that's one of those things where like to go back and, like, if I had a chance to, like, redo all my terrain, make sure it's, like, one glance, like, I know exactly what event that is. So,
well, maybe it sounds like in 2025, you, me, and Ray, given Ray can get free of work, and same with you, and probably me. Yay, life. Go visit Clutch City GT next year, maybe. We make the flight out to Texas.
Yeah, I would love to. I think that'd be a lot of fun. I think it's not that far, which could be very doable. And I know we talked about Lone Star. Maybe this is a good alternative. So,
yeah, we got a lot of things up in the air. But anyway, we got to get back to the placings, because those are kind of important. In fifth place, we have Robert Moreland, a very familiar name. I've seen him around everywhere. I believe he was playing Custodes before. Yeah, he was, because of the fact that I kept looking at the faction list and going, why can't I catch you? but he switched to playing guard this time around. And he went 5-1. So he came in fifth place. We have Steven Salazar coming in fourth, also going 5-1. And then Diego Vilkohaman. That was a mouthful.
Nice job. I had no idea either.
Yeah. Hua, I think. But anyway, playing Thousand Suns, going 5-1. And then we did end up having two undefeateds, but by the cusp of not demon hair, David Hall ended up in second place with Chaos Demons, to be beaten out by Kit Smith Hanna with Dark Angels.
Okay, I am intrigued. Not only did Demons make the list, but everywhere I've listened to that Dark Angels is the worst codex they've come out with in 10th edition, yet they won a GT.
Yep. So I'm pretty sure I have an idea of what was going to be in here, because the two big lists, well, the two big detachments from Space Marines in any flavor has been Iron Storm and Vanguard, because Vanguard is super tricky. You can outposition your opponent a lot, but as our acquaintance Aaron once said, it's a thinking man's list. I don't like thinking.
It does typify how he plays, so fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, we had a really close game. It was a fun game, but oh man.
No, I give Aaron credit for that. It's not, I wasn't making fun of him. It's that sometimes you need to look at the list and go, understand what works for you. And he's a talented enough player that he can look at the field and go, I have these tools. I have rock, paper, and scissor, and I will smack you with the right one. And I think sometimes people delve into a list and they go, what are all these other parts? You know, well, it's like an IKEA project. You have parts left over, and hopefully it doesn't fall over. And over five rounds, it will. So,
So this list ended up being in the Iron Storm Spearhead, and okay, it's made up. Yeah, I'm pretty sure the name of the Unkindness of Ravens is going to point at something. But we have Azrael. We have two Tech Marines, and a Talon Master. That's already one vehicle. And then we have the Company of Heroes, a Dark Shroud, three Redemptor Dreadnoughts, a single Scout Squad, a Storm Speeder's Thunderstrike, two Storm Raven gunships, and an Inquisitorial Henchman. There are so many vehicles that he didn't even have enough room for a Calidus Assassin.
Wow. Okay. Very different. Not what I was expecting.
Well, from what I've heard around the rumor mill, the Redemptor Dreadnoughts are always just good because they're Redemptor Dreadnoughts. They are super cheap and efficient for what they are.
Yeah.
But things like the Talon Master, the Dark Shroud, they help in some way with the other flying vehicles. I'm not exactly sure with what, because the Raven Wing, well, the Talon Master has the Master of Machine War as his enhancement, which I think is what people might give to the old Tech Marine. I'm literally saying I don't know to everything because this is Space Marines and I will never play Space Marines. But when you look at the Thunder Strike and the two Storm Ravens, they each have at least one heavy hitting gun between Multimeltas or a Last Talon or Plasma Cannons to a whole bunch of chaff shots with like twin Icarus rocket pods, the Storm Fury missiles, Hurricane Bolters, Storm Strike missile launchers. Like it's a lot of DACA that comes out of those gunships. And the Thunder Strike is just a faster little thing where it can zip across the board faster than Storm Raven can, I'm pretty sure.
It sounds almost like the typical, here's my block of vehicles, but now they're faster. So I can actually do things if I don't have to shoot you.
This harkens back to the, I think it was in 9th edition or 8th edition, it was the Iron Warriors, well, the Iron Hands flyer list or something like that.
Yes.
Where it was like six of the little ships or something. This reminds me of that.
Forgotten about that. That was nuts. Yeah.
I played against that list like once or twice and it wasn't that bad, but the mobility was definitely annoying.
Also back then was that the rules were a little different with flyers too, but I still think because flyers have the old towering rule. So I know last episode we talked a little bit about there was a three fire list at Pyra, the team event, apparently did terrible, by the way. So, but it's, you know, it still gives that pause for thought that you kind of go, line the sight with the right guns. Maybe it gets things done, you know? Because then it's like, okay, unless you've got fly, you can't interact with it in the charge phase. So, I'm not saying every flyer is good, but I have a feeling there may be one or, you know, there might be that hidden gem in your codex that, that could do it. So,
well, when you think about it stat-wise, a flyer has to move a minimum of 20 inches. The range of a multi-melta is like, what, 18 to 24 inches, something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
All right, you move 20 inches. How likely are you to end within half range for the melta damage?
Well, the board, if you think about a short edge, the short edge, excuse me, long edge, the long edge is 44 inches. So unless they're, you're targeting something on the back line, you should do it. The other thing you want to keep remembering is most flyers have deep strike. I think that, that may just be all diary stuff. I may be wrong on that, but.
Well, it's the, it's you either declare it in hover or fly mode for most of them. So it's, if you put them in hover, then they can start on the table. If they stay supersonic, they start off the table.
Right. I only know the supersonic version. None of the armies I play have hover mode, but I want to say they all come with, because of that, they all come with deep strike. So it's not like I have to always come off my table edge, mm-hmm. that I can just plop them down anywhere. And then the nice thing is, it's not like the old days where, okay, I got my minimum move of 20 and, oh gosh, I may have to stay on this postage stamp of a battlefield. No, I can fly off the table and come back next turn.
Yeah, I think that's a big game of it, is because of the fact that you keep your Storm Raven supersonic, they start off the table. Okay, they come in, I know their bases are smaller than 6 inches, so they don't have to worry about having to touch the edge of the table like if you bring gigantic flyers. True. But I believe for flyers, when they come in from deep strike using that rule, it's basically deep strike for them, so they can just kind of show up anywhere.
I'll look it up here, see which, I don't know if my app has the new Dark Angels stuff up.
Well, it would be under the aircraft rules for them going into reserves and stuff like that.
Okay, hang on one sec. Space Marines data sheets.
Yeah,
give me a sec, see if I can find one. Because the other thing you can do, too, is a rapid ingress.
Yeah.
So then you plop in, and then you get your move. So then, because you get your move, that way you can see where everything is on the table. Because they, it comes in after the other, after your opponent's moved. So.
Yeah. So this list has a lot of very fast-moving, hard-hitting stuff that's hard to pin down. Because the meta is currently based on infantry that don't fly.
Okay, I'm just going to look at the Storm Raven, for example. Keywords.
Don't mind Robert considering buying an Orion or an Ares gunship.
Yeah, that was pretty nasty at the time.
Well, it's not so much, oh, they were great. It's, they're like $600. Yeah.
So I was wrong about the Deep Strike thing. Storm Raven, for example, does have the hover, but does not have deep strike. So that must be a Smaldari thing. So I apologize for that. But neat. All right. Let's see if I got anything. Don't think I have the Dark Angel stuff yet. I might. Hold on. I have the index version. So
I know for a fact I don't have the new stuff.
Yeah, hang on a second here. Yeah. At the time of index, the Nephilim jet fighter did not. It has the same thing. No deep strike, has hover each time. And then, subtract one from the wound roll as well. What the hell is that? Each time a ranged attack against this model, subtract one from the hit roll. If that attack was made by a model that can fly, subtract one from the wound roll as well.
So it's harder to hit with flying units.
Dark Shroud.
Interesting.
Yeah, hang on. Dark Shroud. Yeah, interesting. Dark Talon abilities. Yeah, I am completely off base. That deep strike thing must just be an Eldari thing.
I mean, it makes sense for it to be an Eldar thing, because it's Eldar.
I'm just going to double while we're, now I'm perplexed by this. I'm going to look up the Camlock Fighter, one of those. Maybe it's just Here we go, Crimson Hunter.
Yeah, and
doesn't have it.
I really shouldn't do this. I really shouldn't. I'm looking up the stats of the Ares gunship. Its guns are kind of gross. Oh boy.
Okay. Hold on.
And it can also drop bombs.
Right now we can be like completely delusional here. Apparently, it must be in the aircraft rules because now I'm not even seeing it on the Eldari stuff.
Yep. Let me also see if I can help you find that. Okay, so
let's find it here. Aircraft.
Yep. So deploying aircraft, they must start the battle in reserves instead of being set up on the battlefield, and aircraft models are then treated as strategic reserve units for all rules purposes. Only units that themselves placed into reserves can start the battle embarked within aircraft transports, blah blah blah.
Aircraft models selected to move in the movement phase. Any models within engagement range of it, the aircraft can still make a normal move. I had an argument with my opponent about that. It's still a fallback move. No, it says normal move.
Yeah, because you're not flying. You're not interacting with it.
But it does not. Yeah, I don't know where that must have been a artifact from the previous edition. There's nothing about deep strike in here, so.
Yeah, it's. I think it's also a. Maybe a slight misunderstanding for some people, maybe. I'm not exactly sure.
Well, I know they have the minimum move, but then they have. There's like no maximum. So you can pretty much put them anywhere on the table.
Yeah.
So it might be a moot point, you know, that they're actually deep striking it. The whole idea is that, all right, I come in from my table edge and I can move 80 inches. I'm over here now.
Yeah. Like, I am really considering this Ares gunship right now. This is bad. But what's stupid is it actually benefits from the Marshall Katas. So if it gets in combat with anything that flies, it can make it minus one to be hit.
Nice.
But no, that's a terrible idea for me right now. I should just be happy with my wardens and paint them. Also, this thing is on a pie plate of a base.
Aye. All right. Anything else from this event?
Nope. That's basically it. The shakeup of how many not Eldar and not Necrons in this top 10, though, is quite surprising.
Yeah, because it's, I guess, the internet would tell you otherwise that Necrons are winning all the events, but I kind of get the feeling that's, actually, I'm going to double check that here. No, they have won the most events so far since the data slate has dropped. They have won 7 events. Next closest looks like Custodes with 4. And then Sororitas with 3. And then Death Guard with 3. And Eldari with 3. Oh, Drakari won a 3rd event. That's pretty crazy. So, I don't.
Yep, I couldn't tell you. But indeed, congratulations to all of the winners of the events that we were able to cover tonight. I know I have a lot of painting to start catching up on.
What are you working on these days?
The repainting of the Custodians is a slow, arduous process. I'm still technically working on the same shield captain from like 2 weeks ago.
It's always good to make sure your characters look good.
Well, I had this entire painting plan scheduled, and then I realized that Scorched Earth is like a month away.
And it's sold out, by the way.
Yeah, so it's very much the
players. I'm impressed. So,
So it's now crunch time of painting custodian trim and making sure everything works.
Indeed.
But what about you, Eric? How is the Drukhari reshaping up for you?
Doing pretty well, actually. I mean, the biggest thing is I'm kind of at that weird point where I'm like, I think I have what I need. What I don't have is out of stock. You know, it's not even being produced. So I kind of have that sinking suspicion that wait till it comes out for real rather than spend money on and hobby time on proxies and just learn to play without. So I don't own a Beast Pack, and I do not own, that's what I'm missing, in Finecast. There's one other key component I'm missing. So I'm just like, okay, I can wait for the Mandrakes. I have enough proxy Mandrakes already done that just when the Kill Team ones come out, I'll just pick up those. And but yeah, I spent most of Saturday while I was watching TV with the kids finalizing the stencils that I want to use for painting the hulls of all my Venoms and Raiders. And it's funny, going back to an original design, this kind of reshaped it a little bit. So it has, sometimes you have this grand idea, and then when you put it on the model and realize how small the model is, you're like, oh, it loses all its detail. So you kind of have to make a few amendments so it looks, you know, presentable type thing. But right now I'm trying to figure out the painting order, because it's like, how do I describe this on radio? It's basically like three colors. And although three color minimum just got a, took a major hit this weekend.
Yeah. When you're done with your description, we can actually cover that, because that's a big deal.
Yeah. So basically there's like a tattoo pattern. But rather than the typical, what most people do is, okay, I paint the hull and then I paint the tattoo and leave it. So you have two colors. And then some people do, well, I'll do a gradient to make sure, okay, all the, as you get closer to the edge of the tattoo, it fades to another color type thing. That's what's dark around the edges. I decided to do something completely more complicated, that it's actually a thin, when I say thin, we're talking like millimeter, maybe 2 millimeters thick border. So the idea is that the border will be one color, the inside of the tattoo pattern would be another color, and then the rest of the hull and the outside of the tattoo is a third color. And the idea is that because they're supposed to be pirates, they wouldn't necessarily have identical vehicles. So across the 5-6 Venoms that I own, you have all three colors, and all six of them, it just, they may be in different order. So one might have the black hull with an orange trim and a different, in the dark red in the center of the tattoo. The other one might have a red hull with the orange trim and black inside, or a black trim with orange, and they just mixing it up so they look all individualized. Keeping track of that is going to be a pain in the butt.
You're telling me, and I'm sitting here doing like green cloaks with actual highlights and all this other stuff on custodians.
Yeah. So doing that and just trying to decide how, on the inside of the tattoo pattern, do I put a second stencil to give it kind of a extra feel? But I think I might just do a realistic flame effect and just give it, I'm pretty good at that, so I might just do that. And then I'm like, okay, once I got that done, the Venoms are pretty big, the Raiders are a little bigger. How do I copy that theme onto the Reaver jet bikes? Because they get really small really fast.
I could definitely see you doing that.
So I got to do that. The other goofy thing, just to finish up, days, you know, I've had this army for since end of 5th, early 6th. So some of the new weapon options that are actually pretty good in 10th edition aren't ones that are very common. So I actually get the splinter rifle, splinter cannon warriors. And I need a few more shredders and stuff like that. So I have to go through my bit box and create a couple warriors with the appropriate weapons. So that's part of the fun too. Most of my time has been focused on terrain. I spent the rest of my time after the tattoo pattern, spent about a good 3 hours. I came up with a AdMech themed table using GW terrain. So I'm pretty excited about it. It was really pushing the, what I saw something on Pinterest, it was some fan art, and it was a Imperial cruiser going into a Ramaclis starbase. So imagine this giant, you know, the typical toothed door opening, just kind of like Star Wars, but the doorway is actually a Gothic arch, and how they made it look mechanical yet Gothic at the same time. I was like, okay, let me copy that on a tabletop scale. And 3 hours later, I was like, I think I pulled it off. So I got to run some prototypes out of cardboard and see what it looks like.
Well, you know that I'm more than willing to show up and be a test dummy. Yep.
So, and then today, when I was doing stuff around the house, tempted to just take the risk. And do I come up with a... One of the things we're running into in our tournaments is we don't have the amount of setup time we used to get. It used to be we used to set up the night before, right as the store was closing. So we had time to measure and put the terrain out and not have to interfere. Now, lately, that's not the case. We're setting up literally 40 minutes before round one. So you're also collecting tickets, answering rules questions while you're setting up terrain. And so one of the things I was thinking of, do I start coming up with tables that have the GW layout already pre-printed on them, so you just can plop the terrain on top?
Yeah, like in my tournament this weekend, I had an epiphany of, well, the acrylic bases are acrylic. I can clean them. I can mark the acrylic bases with the parts of the building that you can actually see into naturally.
That's an interesting idea. Yeah, I could do that too.
So that way it's like, hey, this is where you get to stand and shoot at people and be shot at.
That's a good idea as well. So they just eliminate, hey, if you're in this area, you are in line of sight.
You still get cover,
yep.
But you can be seen.
You can be seen. That's not a bad idea. I like that. Yeah, because the other issue I have too is I have this grand idea of all these themed terrain pieces, and then we set up for the tournament in a mad hurry, and all of a sudden the chaos board is on a green grass. I'm like, that didn't quite come out right. So the idea is to actually, rather than forego the mats, which by the way, we still have a lot of the old mats, the 4x6 mats, which are so we got to tape them off, which takes another 10-15 minutes of critical time. So you had to come in there with a 3D mat. It's been texturized and the terrain is ready to go. So just a thought. So
yeah, I think we realistically only need to do that for like one table and then maybe two.
Yeah, so well, that's what my focus is on is getting a few tables that look awesome. So you know, I'm no longer faced with the how do I make enough terrain for 85 of my closest friends? not my problem anymore.
Yep, I'm pretty sure in the next foreseeable couple of months here, I'm going to own another set of terrain. So that way I can bring four sets of terrain to every tournament that I run.
Awesome. I do like that. Everybody thinks I'm like this super snob about everything has to be DIY. It's not. Some of the FLG stuff is really good, and I really do like the new set they came out with. There's a lot of small details that whoever designed those did a nice job on, and I kind of wish they went back to their old ranges, because some of the pieces of terrain that people hated because they had no use in 6th and 7th edition are fantastic in 10th edition. Like number one would be the Necrons. You know, those pylons, you know, they're not pylons. What's the better way to describe them?
The obelisks?
Yeah, the obelisks or summoning cores. You know, you put two of those on a base and those are exactly the, what I call terrain pod C. So if you're looking at GW layout number one, you've got those two tall ones and then two that are like two small ones side by side on the same base, you can use those obelisks for the and the summoning cores for those, and it's going to look fantastic. Just put two of them on one base and you're good. And whereas before you had to, then you take the big ones, the two-story bigger ones, I think they were the mausoleum or something like they call them, just take your chances and cut them in half with a jigsaw, and now you should be good to go. And that those pieces and those date back to the, you know, the early days of when they made terrain. Those are really good. I have to go back to their orc stuff. Their orc stuff was the best bang for the buck. I don't know size wise if it still works for the new 10th edition, but yeah. So tell me, is 3-color minimum dead?
Well, it's not dead, but you definitely have to do more than 3 colors and just paint your base.
Yeah, a couple of new rules coming out from Frontline Gaming, which I thought was interesting. First thing, you know, and Ray and I were kind of going back and forth on this prior to the show in terms of, well, they already have a code of conduct. Ah, that was the ITC code of conduct. Now it is Frontline Gaming has an additional code of conduct. So for specifically for their events. So I guess they hold themselves to a higher standard is what they're trying to do. And part of that includes, yeah, 3-color minimum is no longer the bare minimum. It's been raised a little bit. Mostly because people are complaining about gray plastic being on stream.
Yep. And I remember the old days of people going dot, 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 color of the base. Okay, we're good.
You know, it's funny. I was talking to my kids about it. And the most shocking part of this conversation is that my wife brought it up. There was a time you did not go to a tournament with unpainted models, period. It was just bad form. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I'd say 70% of the army that I've been taking to tournaments since 2018 is the same crappy paint job that I did because I had 4 days before LVO to get the army ready. And I keep telling myself, I'm going to fix it. It's been 6 years. It's not fixed. It still looks like crap. You know, the oranges don't even match. And so it's interesting how times have changed. Actually, another crazy story. I got thrown out of a GW store because I had an unpainted model in my army. I signed up.
That's a first.
No, and I use it at work, you know, trying to explain this as where they missed the opportunity is that rather than just throwing me out of the store tournament, what they should have said is, hey, I'll let you play. On one condition, I need you to sign up for a painting session next week. You need to sign up for it now. Whether you show up or not is up to you. But I need the promise that you are going to get that model painted, and I'm giving you the opportunity. That would have been a great customer service thing. Instead, I literally took my entire army out of the case. They went, yeah, your warlord is not painted.
You don't get it.
Yeah, pack it up and go home. And the guy even said, well, we'd love to have you back once you get your act together. And I just looked at him like, you do realize I've got like $500 of your product in my bag right now, and I'm about to walk out. You know?
Yeah, that's something that people are getting used to seeing painted armies on the table again with before you even go and play.
Yeah.
Which, yeah. People also show up with gray plastic because they just bought it and they need to practice it. I'll be guilty of that tomorrow.
Shame.
Hey, they're going to have primer at least, okay?
You know, and it's not too, though. I mean, it's also, we didn't have TTS back then, you know, so you didn't have the opportunities to get a few reps in with models you don't own yet. So I think it's kind of, people got kind of used to, you know, the hobby doesn't matter type thing. And you can make a lot of other stipulations that, well, conversion work is harder to do because it's hard to find parts. I think it's swinging back the other way now that 3D printing is becoming more prevalent. But the old days of scrounging for, I need 8 plasma guns by tomorrow, you know, that sort of nonsense is gone. So, and Harlequin Fusion pistols, those used to sell for like $5 a pop on eBay. Now they're, nobody cares. Mm-hmm. It's in the box. That's what the unit gets. So,
yep. But I am very happy with the fact that people are encouraging better, well, not better, but more painted armies. Because, yeah, I get it. Some people don't like painting. They don't dedicate the time. But there are people out there that you can hire to paint for you, given you have the funds available. I understand not everyone can afford commission painting, but it's still an available choice, or you accept the fact that you're not a good painter and you'll work on your stuff eventually.
Okay, question for you. I'm going to be really careful how I phrase this, because I do not want to offend somebody in our local area. Is it better to come with gray plastic or just a garish paint job? Because that's what you can do.
As much as I just said that, hey, you have time to paint, I would say for you to show up and have fun, it is better to show up with gray plastic. If you truly have fun with not painting your army, then all right, you can take your time and paint it. You can do like literally a single brush stroke a day and not care. But if you care about how your army is going to look when it's done, then dedicate some time to painting.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, some of the paint jobs that was always like, oh wow, that's unique. And there's some of them kind of like, I'm not expecting everybody to be Michelangelo or even Gold Demon winner, but every now and then I'm kind of like going, bro, dude, were you trying to paint this while operating a pogo stick? What were you doing? And and then the other thing too is even like some of the best painters will throw you off. I'm gonna give a shout out. It's meant to promote it, but not. But it's, I just know it's my personal taste. Jim Vessel used to be on the show here and he's running his painting service. He's a fantastic painter. I just cannot get behind his color choices. And maybe I'm just because I'm not artistically trained. And I'm just like, okay, that'd be really cool if it was just something. But yeah, he does some great work. I just can't stand his choice of colors. So I'm like, ah.
Yeah, it's the same thing where I wanted to paint my custodians a different color. I ended up in the same color palette of blues and purples.
Yeah, I kind of run the same boat too. I was like, okay, I was thinking about starting a new army, and I was like, what color am I going to paint them? I need to get out of this rut. They all kind of look the same after a while.
Yeah. That's why I tried to color code my army. Like, hey, these are characters. This is one unit. This is that.
And one of the armies ended up selling was like, yeah, they're pretty much the same color as my army that I use now. I'm like, okay, bye-bye. Okay, one last one of our most popular segments, this kind of before we wrap things up, is mid-table obscurity. Yes, folks, we can talk over and break down the most popular factions from those of us who go 3-2 or 2-3. So the top armies, surprise, surprise, are actually shadowing the top armies that are winning events. So people are trying to ride the coattails of some winning armies. So number one, Necrons making up 10% of the field of the mid-table. Adeptus Custodes at 8%, and Space Marines, always popular, still in third place at 7%. Interesting enough, we've got a little bit of a spike here of Tyranids, and they're only one of the top four that is yet to win an event. So really, really popular in the mid-tables, but yeah, when you look at Death Guard and Eldari, they have dropped out of the top five significantly. And yeah, Space Marines way down there. They're out of the top 10, making up roughly 4% of the meta, but way down there. So give you an idea. Yeah, only 85 players are playing Chaos Space Marines in the mid tables at this point. That's twice as many people are playing Chaos Knights, give you an idea.
That is quite a tank. Holy crap.
Yeah, when you talk about the middle ground there. So. And by the way, if you really want to, well, be the snowflake in the room, Gene Stealer Cult, yeah, 36 people. Add back at 38. I look at my son's army and I'm going like, hey, kid, since you're not using that during hockey season.
Hey, Dad, where'd my thing go?
Yeah, what are you talking about? It's right there. I don't remember it being painted. Shut up.
I painted it for you. Yeah.
So.
But yep, otherwise, that's pretty much it for the week. Nothing else crazy has happened this week for us.
At least not show related. It's been a crazy week at work. It's kind of nice to come on and just put it away for an hour.
Yeah, I my work schedule is still garbage. I am still trying to figure out how to stay awake after this.
Yeah, your schedule is bonkers at this point, and it keeps changing. I think that's the worst part.
Yeah, but I'll live.
Yeah, try to get through it. Yeah, I just sometimes just kind of look at human behavior and I go, what? How are you adulting like doing this? But okay.
Because I'm unsupervised.
Well, that's exactly what happened. Is like, because the way our schedules work, there's five of the 7 days out of the week. So that means 3 of the days we overlap, 2 of the days each of us are independent. She just went off the rails those 2 days I wasn't supervising. I was like, what the hell happened?
I don't know. You fix it.
Oh, that's what I did. It got a little uglier after that. Anyway, back to the 40K real quick. Just a comparison. I'm looking at back to StatCheck, by the way. We rely on them for all our statistical analysis. The most popular X and 1, so this would be the tier above the mid-table obscurity. Any guess which army is the most popular?
Orcs.
No.
Darn it. That's my only guess.
Okay. Black Templar.
Yeah, I can see that.
25% of all X of the players who want X1 since the status slate has dropped are Black Templar, followed closely by Necrons and Adeptus Custodes. So we're seeing that. We know those other first two, Necrons and Custodes, had several event wins, so you assume there was quite a few at X and 1, but Black Templar. Interesting.
Hey, people like punching things.
Apparently. It's a pretty fun list, apparently. Just another Marine list to me, but whatever.
You and me too, man.
Yeah. Just a Zenith Sky. Anyway, hopefully we'll get some pictures of all the stuff we're working on, get those on to our Instagram. I do promise I now finally got my Beskos Pairings app all up and ready, all my subscriptions realigned to the new app. So we'll bring back the Exterminatus ranking system as well as a new barometric measure of player ability. Looking forward to it. Stealing that from Sports Analytics, and we'll be discussing that on next week's show. In the meantime, my name's Eric.
I'm Robert.
Thanks for listening to the Exterminatus Podcast.
Hey, listeners, this is Raymond with the Exterminatus Podcast here to talk to you about KR cases. If you're like me and you're constantly looking for that better way to store your armies, then look no further than KR cases. That's right, this is the foam company known for their soft blue foam in the cardboard cases. They're a great way to mix and match whenever you're heading out for that next tournament. You can just swap out those boxes and no need to worry about switching the foam in and out. They're sturdy. The boxes help protect your models, and when you order, they come fast, the order is right, and for a better price than the other guy. So go to krcases.com, and when you place your order, be sure to mention the Exterminatus Podcast.
So, friends, I have a very, very important question. Is your beer keg boring? Does it not have enough tentacles coming out of it? Does it not taste as funny as you remember because you didn't put a tear in it? Well, the wonderful makers of the Necro Nom 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 to replace your average pizza decided to come out with another book of the Lovecraft Cocktail. So, they're from RedDukeGames.com, and it will guide you through 78 different kinds of cocktails to summon a demon, summon a space bug. Who knows? Either way, it's going to be a very, very wonderful time, and we would highly recommend that you try to not ingest too many while at the gaming table, because we don't know exactly what's going to happen when you roll Perils of the Warp or you roll a natural one on your persuasion check if you decide to play indie. So if you're looking for fanciful drinks, go ahead and grab the Lovecraft Cocktails by the madmen at RedDukeGames.com, the makers of the Necro Nom Nom.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.